Welcome to Substitute Intelligence and the fourth of our End of the World podcasts. With the state police stopping people fleeing the plague-ridden New York City, paranoia seems to be the rule rather than the exception. Join me in exploring the madness media has created for us in the 21st century.
Which we feed. Come on now, try and understand the way I feel under your command. Come take my hand, we're undercover. Yeah, color me now, color me now, color me now. Because the night belongs to lover. Because the night belongs to last. Telephone. Love is an angel disguised as lust. Here in my bed when the morning comes. Come on now, try and understand the way I feel when I'm in your hands. Come take my hand as love descends.
Deep sleep. The cartwheel is broken, rotting in the bright sunlight, looking a little like a squinting eye ready to close. Brown-sided mountains stand behind it at the edge of a dead brown field. History claims men died on it, but only a vivid imagination can paint their raised hands clutching sunlight and life, not yet aware of when the war exactly ended, or if it did, or still goes on. Piles of raw wood, caskets waiting for their final moment before some general orders them filled and then buried. War is hell, Sherman once said, but for many, it is a mudhole where they learn to bleed. Dried up riverbeds with a stream of green running down their middle and stained red by the small rivets of men made when they bleed. It is all the same sun now, and then on the same field preserved by those who survived to remember those who did not, even if the holes dug to bury their caskets vanish over time. On some mornings, A heavy mist flows over this part of New Jersey, filling in the spaces, covering over the brown stains, making the mountain invisible, out of which deer walk along with the ghosts of those who have perished here. Media madness. Will Rogers once pointed out that the fool who doesn't know he's a fool is generally the one who thinks he knows everything. A woman from Hoboken told the radio host this week that her friend, a neighbor, is too terrified to leave her apartment. She just won't come out for anything, the woman said. Well, I don't know the details. The demographic is likely makes this shut-in a member of the millennial generation, or perhaps later, part of that well-educated, overprotected generation of kids who grew up with rubber mats on their playgrounds instead of concrete, and no doubt has her radio or internet tuned to one of those all-news, all-the-time propaganda stations we call mainstream media, reporting blow by blow the attack of this alien flu we're all suffering from, if not in reality, then in our heads. Without a Russian conspiracy to harp on, or the tearing down of Confederate statues, or even the misguided attempt to impeach the president, media is desperate to come up with stuff to keep its audience. So, reports cases in which people have tested positive for a disease nearly 80% won't even know they have, and those who do will recover from with a helping of NyQuil. Media's primary purpose these days is to generate fear, and this virus has given them the rare opportunity to create hysteria, not just among the general population, but politicians too. Maybe it was always like this. Maybe back in Black Friday in 1929, we had media on the ground shouting for people to jump from the roofs after the stock market crashed. But this time it is clear. This time media continues to pick on the bodies long after they have been pronounced dead, giving us pictures of coffins in Italy to make it clear what that woman in Hoboken can expect if she steps out of her door. Politicians feed the frenzy because they are desperate to appear to be doing something, and often when they do things for appearances, they do the wrong things. So, what will historically be considered a terrible flu season will have created the second Great Depression. Everybody, everywhere is chasing headlines. These are all that the woman hears inside her apartment, the drumbeat of artificial doom few of us can escape. Thomas Jefferson once said he would rather live in a nation without government than without a free press. But remember, he lived in an era when Ben Franklin was a reporter, not Rachel Maddow. I'm sure Jefferson would have second thoughts now. Comrade Trader, I hear the boots scuffing on the cobblestones, and I believe they have come for me. Perhaps the sound has been there all along, but I missed it for the pounding pain in my head. Thoughts crashing together like colliding particles. I keep thinking Einstein's fear about God playing dice with the universe and other quotes from after the Americans first dropped the atomic bomb. I stumble through alternate pools of darkness and light like a drunk, though not a taste of vodka has touched my lips tonight. Not yet, anyway. I move in the general direction of a tavern where I know I shall indulge in more than a little, to wipe my mind of these chores my government expects me to perform, to ease the fear of their wrath when they discover I have not performed them. They will kill you, Valad, my assistant said, her words still rolling around inside of me like as yet unexploded bulletins. I know. She is right. We live in a world with only two directions, east and west. Our lives are determined by which direction we choose, as are our deaths. Here, in the east, a man's life is determined by duty, and once duty is violated, he has no life. The thud of boots grows louder, closer,
more hurried, as if the echo of my pounding, panicked heart. If it is all I can do to hurry my own step and keep the thudding boots at the same direction. I am not a violent man. My weapon in life has always been my brain, science serving as my defense against the vulgar and the insane ambitions of political forces of my time. Yet fear reverts me to the most primitive form, and I stop, pick up a stone, and carry it with me, sorting through the rush of thoughts as to what I might do with it and how I might manage to use it when the time comes. My step increases, so I am practically running. If I can get indoors, around other people, death may be less quick in finding me. Authorities here kill in the dark, in secret. It is how they spread fear. Kill after dark, and we hide like children, waiting for the worst to crawl out from under our beds. I come to a place where the pools of light vanish for more than a block, and only light washing over me from passing cars. I turn, look, and see the same lights illuminating the shadows that haunt me. Two tall men step into the doorway to avoid the notoriety, and I move on. Dogs howl from out of the mouth of an alley I pass, and I hear their howl and the word traitor. A woman's brown face appears at a window, her harsh voice demanding to know why I am lurking here. I ache to beg for her protection, but there is none here, only the perpetual grind of the government's gears. I drop my stone, apologize, and move on again, almost myself, as I see the dim glow of the tavern sign and rush to it, through the door beneath it, where a mob greets me with their sweat and their loud voices. I put rubles down on the bar and order a drink. I feel the window on my back as I drink, and I know that the angels of death have come into the tavern too, behind me. I need not look. The face of the bartender and others near me tell me all I need to know. So does the sudden silence and the click of heels of the tall men approaching me. My head buzzes with the confused thoughts, east and west. Our bombs are not as good as their bombs. Neither are our missiles, schools, or factories. And I do not wish them to be. Traitor, I hear my inner voice snarl, as a man's hand settles on my shoulder and a man's voice tells me to come along. I glare around at the others for help, but they divert their gazes. I go along, knowing no one will see me again, feeling the slow comfort of the drink that turns my insides numb, even at the concept of death. A Little Liza Williams from 1969. Conversations. The touching tenderly, the hard embrace of silence, the tongue finds its own bullets, and the mind its own salve. Conversations as violence, conversations as a flow of loving, conversations as a substitute for touching. What of meaning happens? What of permanence is engraved within, placed in category, in image, in quote, the mind makes up its own compendium. Beware the hand that stirs the brain also doodles. Words, rearrangements of words, words hold out of their familiar context, given new sounds, new meanings, words that too often dying on millions of lips, shriveled words, words in bosom, sudden turns of phrase, language as a creative medium, the pleasure of sounding and saying, the overlay of something else that turns it into poetry. Poetry is something more than just words, the sounds, the meanings. We leap within the poem. Poetry reaches us through the channels of little wider than talk, a little closer than text. Poetry is alive in the children's mouths, is songs, is where you hear it. We talk, or we hear that, and we sit in silence. In silence, our heads are a theater of conversations, spoken, unspoken, by the mouth. The mad bubble of their secrets share their visions, display their fears. The sane let the show go on in silence, sometimes transmute their agonies through art, their joys as well. A thousand possibilities enacted themselves in speech. A thousand questions seek a thousand answers. Speech is print made vocal. Speech is dreaming and dancing. Speech is more than words, is less than conversation. Talk shows, see talk. No, see people talk to each other. Listening alone in a room with a TV set alone and with these people talking to each other, but just for us, to all of us at one time. We join the enchanted company. We are privy to lives more vivid than our own. We are not alone because the reality is not the room. It is not ourselves. It is the TV set, and we are inside the screen. Our lives are built on spoken history, the tales of our childhood. We form our concepts of our heritage from antidotes and grandfather with silver cane, the aunt who kept a bag of candy in her pocket to give out. We search within ourselves to match these traits. We listen to the times before we were born, trying to credit them with a reality. They remain as foreign and unbelievable as time to come after we die. But still, we like to hear, and we find some reassurance in these tales. For talk, that is conversation. And more than that, we need old friends. We can take the leap and swirls, the swivels and changing thought, the sudden phrases, the instant replays of themes in perfect alliance. For a time, the aloneness vanishes in a mutual progression of meaning and feeling. Old friends speak as well-tuned language, understand the space of silence, the silence of a smile. Writing is broadcast talk, sometimes only chatter, sometimes a yell in the void, sometimes a sharing of feelings, makes presumptions and asks cooperation. Writing is, most of all, a one-way conversation. Is there anyone out there listening?
To the music.